Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities in London. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. Last season, we closed with an interview with Bill Chandler, the convener of the Urban Design Forum in Melbourne, Australia. We're delighted to open this season with an interview of Robert Huxford, the director of the Urban Design Group in London, England. The interview was recorded while walking through Clerkenwell in London on a wet December morning. So can you explain a little bit about what the Urban Design Group's about?
I think it's as much a movement as anything, it's a campaign. It's about encouraging people, infusing them. And in the world we live in, where there are so many commercial pressures and corporate bodies that seem to grind down standards of design and quality of life, I think the Urban Design Group produces a valuable service. It's a sort of oasis where people can come and refresh themselves and believe that there is a hope for the future.
You were involved in something called Public Realm. What was that?
Public Realm Information Advice Network, set up a number of years ago to give highway engineers skills in landscape and urban design and planning, and vice versa, to give people that are involved in landscape and planning an understanding of highways and traffic so that they can both talk to one another and not be bamboozled one by the other. It's about getting a single controlling mind in the public realm, somebody that can demand high quality and know that it can be delivered and know how to deliver it.
So let's explore your background, because I first came across you when you were at the Institute of Civil Engineers.
Well, you can talk about people's background, but I think this is probably one of the biggest problems that we are confronted with. We are totally obsessed by people's background, and it's an interest in history, where they've been rather than where they're going. What we should be interested in is our epitaphs. What do we aim to do? What do we intend to do? Rather than have this notion that we're trapped by our pasts. The fact that somebody trained in engineering, or did an engineering degree at the age of 19, or embarked in landscape architecture, it shouldn't consign them to a particular professional silo for the rest of their lives. We should have the opportunity to develop out of those silos and do the things that we're best at and develop our potential fully. So it's the epitaph that matters, not the background.
This is about walking and people who work in the world of walking. So what we're interested in is finding out what your thoughts are on walking, and also how you feel the walking agenda is developing in light of your role as Director of Urban Design Group.
Well, I think one of the bases of urban design is the pedestrian perspective, pedestrian primacy. After all, you can't use any sort of development, really, unless you walk. Even in America, these car-focused development, there is that final few metres one has to traverse on foot between the car and the front door of the premises one is entering in. There is a huge amount that is to be done, but one recalls one of the basic objectives of urban design as outlined in By Design, that's legibility. There's the ease of access objective. It's all about being able to get to places, and to get to places one ends up, one hopes, living life to the full.
Over the last 5 or 6 years, you've been involved in aspects of getting people together, training and providing advice, etc., on public realm and streets. Do you feel that it's all talk and no action?
I think when the chips are totally down, a lot of government policy and what is reported in the media is dictated by the motor lobby. Firstly, it stems from a basic problems of numeracy. If you take 100 people, 100 pedestrians, and stick them at a junction, as one might find in a busy town centre, busy city centre, you can easily have a situation where there are 100 people waiting to cross. It looks like a crowd, it looks like conviviality, it looks like life. Take that same group of people and give them each a car. You've got 100 cars, you've got a tailback of traffic that runs for a third of a mile. And that looks like economic meltdown. It looks like a major crisis. So I think our decision-making systems don't give the right balance to the the needs of the pedestrian, the importance of the pedestrian, as opposed to the importance of people in vehicles. Traffic is far, far, far more visible than pedestrians, and I think this is reflected in the allocation of resources made by local authorities and by central government.
Of the initiatives that you're aware of, which are the ones that you think are really doing good things for pedestrians at the moment?
The most important initiatives, I would say, are the ones that deal with the reduction of speed of vehicles. The introduction of blanket 20-mile-an-hour limits, I think, is a very encouraging step forward. There is this issue about fuel consumption. I would say that 20-mile-an-hour speed limits have the potential to reduce fuel consumption in the first instance by changing the way the car is driven by about 10%, and if carefully driven, by 20%. There's a potential as a knock-on by creating a more civilised environment for pedestrians and cyclists to increase the modal share of walking and cycling, because it simply becomes a more pleasant activity and there is less fear of being killed or injured by a vehicle. There was some research published by Brake last year that suggested about two-thirds of motorists are too scared to cycle, and this is not a desirable situation in which to be at all.
We're faced with an ageing population. We're going to have lots of us over 60, in fact. Talk is there going to be more of us over 60 than under 60. So how do you think urban designers today are designing public space and streets and pedestrian areas for an elderly population?
I think urban designers aspire to that. Developments now have well thought out pedestrian routes. The problem comes when you start to patch these new developments onto the existing public realm. One is talking about road grids that probably date 100, 200 years or more. I mean, some of them go back to the deep and distant medieval period. We're talking about roads that have been adapted to vehicle use and then subsequently dominated by it. So invariably, you can have a wonderfully designed new development, but it's attached to the rest of the world through some fairly nasty circumstances along busy main roads, along routes that people don't necessarily want to walk. So the challenge, I think, is to, not so much in the new development, but in the way we manage existing, pedestrians feel safe and loved.
Another area or issue which I think is important is that four-fifths of us live in suburbs, which were designed when car travel was less prevalent, perhaps, but nonetheless was available to those who could afford to live in the suburbs. And yet now we seem to have lots of initiatives to make our urban areas more walkable. What initiatives are there to make the suburbs more walkable?
Well, the suburbs are a massive challenge, and I think they tend to be overlooked. The future holds the prospect that local facilities will close down as we shift more to an internet retail-based economy. I think we can envisage local shops and high street shops closing down. There are going to be fewer destinations for people to walk to. I think this is an area that needs looking at urgently.
Have you a favourite walking route?
What do I like about walking? I think what I go for is interest. We're walking around a part of London that's typified by small plots. They're about 5 or 6 metres across, running up to maybe 20 metres or so. And what it does mean is that there's a huge variety of architecture. You've got modern buildings, you've got buildings from the late Georgian period. So there's this tremendous variety, and it's all moving before our eyes in, a better resolution than high-definition television. We're picking up the sounds and the smells, and the conversations that people are going past. When you're outside, you're picking up all sorts of stimuli, from the sky, the temperature, the weather, the humidity, the background noise levels, and all this changes, and it's a thoroughly engaging experience. I think what I look for, I suppose that the ideal street is about, I don't know, 200, 300 metres long in terms of the view it offers, and then you can go around a corner and then you've got another view. That's terrific, and it's the sort of thing that you get in a town or a city with a medieval street plan. You get these roads and lanes that seem to drift through, and this combination with interesting architecture from a wide range of different periods. And I think if you've got an A to B route that you can vary so that you've got a choice of environment to pass along, that's the best. This is St John's Street. There's a story that goes back to the age of cattle droving, say in the 18th century. St John's Street links right to the the northernmost parts of Highland Scotland, you have this notion that cattle would have been driven down from the Highlands down to Norfolk, where they would have been fattened up a bit, and then onto Smithfields, down this very road. And you can see St Paul's Cathedral lies at the far end of the street. So you've got this astonishing realisation that a cow that was born in, say, 1760, in the sight of black houses in the Highlands, would have died with a glimpse of a gleaming St Paul's Cathedral. I suppose what was at the time the most vibrant, the most dazzling, the fastest expanding city on the planet. And this is what's magic about walking. I think when you're walking along a street, you're walking through history. You see the efforts of individuals to make the very best out of their lives, the best of opportunities, in the buildings, in the pattern of streets, and the little curves and the kinks. It's social history, and it's there to be experienced. And now, can I draw your attention to the paving material? Well, now what have we got here? That looks like a bit of Mount Sorrel granite from probably from Leicester. And so when was this stuff first brought in? Before that, we'd be very much dependent on sea transport, on bringing in sets. Not enough is done on this, because there's a bit of a hidden code as to what the transport system that served London at particular times actually was, and the trading links that existed. Because is this a fairly fine-grained grey granite? You might get whinstone or basalt. You've got Cornish granite curbs. It's all evidence of a changing transport system and trading links. Nice bit of Yorkstone there.
You know, English Heritage did a very nice geological resource for children, which was Under My Feet. And it's quite good. It tells you all about how to recognise which stones come from which quarry.
Right, well, we need one of those for sets.
For sets.
And paving slabs. And
what can be done to encourage walking?
We've discussed some of the physical changes in terms of the management and about reducing speed. It's physical messages that cars send out, the noise, the fumes. These all are hostile and threatening to pedestrians. So those need to be tackled. Clearly, there need to be destinations that people can walk to. And the journey between A and B needs to be an interesting and pleasant one. But I think there's increasing research that's looking at ways of changing people's lifestyles from the United States, which suggests that a bit of personal mentoring, even phoning people up and encouraging them to go for a walk, just to keep them on track, having agreed a different lifestyle, those sorts of things apparently can be effective. So we need to take it just a bit beyond physical design into management and even into the realm of, I think it's wrong to call it the nanny state, but we need to have some sort of community that encourages one to walk and gives the energy to the individual when sometimes they're, every now and again we feel exhausted and can't be bothered, yet getting into a walk, you're beginning to feel alive again, getting the dusty cobwebs away, blowing them away, getting rid of the cabin fever for being hauled up in a building for 8 hours and what have you. It's what life is, isn't it?
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities. In this episode, you've heard from Robert Huxford, the director of the Urban Design Group. If you have any views on this interview or on any walking issues, we would love to hear from you. Please follow the links on the talkingwalking.net website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes at talkingwalking.net. Written, recorded, and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities, our graphic artwork was designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music was composed and recorded by Simon Sanders at Easytronic.